Dakota has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Brewers are back home, which means it's time for another Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Brewers podcast. I'm Matt Velasquez, and I'm here with Tom Hodricourt, and we're going to talk about the first place Brewers. Tom, you know, how did they get to this point? I know it's early in the season, but how did they get to, you know, being in first place in the NL Central, and how sustainable is what they've done so far?
Well, how they got here was playing way better on the road than most inexperienced teams do, Matt. They, you know, they are 13-8 on the road. They've had three road trips. They've been a winning record or 500, at the least on their trips. In their last homestand, they also played better against Boston and New York, but their offense has been very high performing. And the amazing thing is that they've been able to do well while Ryan Braun was on the disabled list. He came off Sunday, but he had been missing for a good while. Eric Thames has had leg issues and has really fallen off offensively. And then even Travis Shaw, their cleanup hitter, missed a few games with finger problems. So the depth of their lineup has really come forward. Guys have stepped up and taken the place of others. I mean, how do you explain an Eric Sogard, you know, showing up and batting 600 over a road trip like he did or whatever it was and driving in a bunch of runs? So it's truly been different guys every day, and that's how you win.
You know, and they haven't been playing in an easy schedule. I mean, they've been playing, you know, they played the Cubs multiple times. They've gone against the Rockies. They've had a couple series against the Cardinals, and they've gone all through the Central, and they've had pretty good success. You know, it's not, doesn't seem fluky schedule-wise, does it?
No, and let's, you know, be honest here. When you're a rebuilding team, there's no such thing as an easy schedule or an easy series. Now, they went to San Diego, and the Padres are real early in their rebuild and have a bunch of young players. They're sort of like a 4A team. And the Brewers won 3 of 4. So you can say they did what they should have done there. But when you're rebuilding and you have, not a ton of experienced players, which the Brewers don't have, You know, you can't look at any series and say, oh, we're way better than them. We should be beating them. So where, you know, like a team like Boston or New York or the Cubs or this year the Astros could say when they play a last place team, they could say, oh, we should win. The Brewers have to fight every day, and they have this daily approach of fighting that day's game or that night's game and worrying about everything else later. That's really benefited them.
You know, and you mentioned Ryan Braun coming back. What does his presence mean for this team, considering the hot streak that they were on, even without him?
Yes. Well, it certainly gives them another bat that people are going to have to contend with. You know, he's generally their number three hitter, so it sets up their lineup at the top. He fits in so nicely between Thames, who usually bats second, and Shaw, who bats fourth, because he's a right-handed hitter. So if a team's going to bring a lefty in to face Thames and they leave him in to face Braun because they know Shaw is also coming up, then it gives Braun a good chance to do damage against the lefty. And he's, over his career, has really torn up left-handed pitching. So he just fits so nicely in that three spot. And when they have Thames going, Braun going, and Shaw going 2-3-4, that's a very potent trio.
Yeah, and since the last time we talked, the Brewers have, you know, gone 9-3. They did miss one game though, and that game was the postponed game, the controversially postponed game on Saturday against the Cubs. Can you kind of just take us through the kind of series of events during that day that ultimately led to Brewers GM David Stearns talking about, you know, how the Cubs might not have called that for the right reasons?
Right. Well, let's start. That series started Friday, and they played in horrible conditions, wind, rain, and cold on Friday. And the game was stopped for 2 hours at one point. Everybody just agreed it was about as miserable a day as they've ever played. And so they start the series that way. And whether that influenced decisions the next day, I don't know. You know, maybe they were just gun shy about playing a second straight day in the rain. But I will tell you this. When I'm on the road covering the Brewers, one of the very first things I do every day is cut on local TV to see what the weather forecast is. Because, A, you'd like to know if it's going to be a factor in playing the game, and B, also what to wear, and just, you know, generally just get a feel for what kind of day we're dealing with. So that morning, especially after that horrible Friday, you know, Saturday morning I cut on local TV, and the forecast said we're going to have rain in the morning hours, but then it's going to stop around midday, and the afternoon should be dry, and then there's a chance of reoccurring rain at 5 or 6 o'clock. So with a 1:20 game, I said, this is perfect. We laugh a lot about the dreaded window. Oh, we have a window, because we always talk about, yeah, it's slammed shut on our fingers all the time. Well, this one seemed like a pretty decent window. So you go to the ballpark, and it is raining in the morning, like they say. But instead of waiting to see if it did clear up or if that forecast would be correct, around 11:25, the Cubs called the game, 2 hours before game time. And then, as the forecast said that I saw on television, it stopped at noon, didn't rain again the rest of the afternoon. There was no recurring rain, so that never would have been a factor. It actually got nicer. It was in the high 50s temperature-wise most of the day, so it wasn't going to be a brutal cold day either. So they just missed an opportunity to play the game by calling it so early. And so if the very least thing that happened was that they were using a bad weather forecast, that's unfortunate. But if there was any competitive advantage they were trying to gain, the Brewers were not happy about that. And every competitive advantage would be gained by the Cubs, because now the game has been rescheduled for July 6th, which was a mutual off day for both clubs. The Cubs are at home. The Brewers are at home before that, but go to New York the next day, and they would have left on the afternoon of that off day to go to New York. Now they got to go down to Chicago, travel out of there, lose an off day, play another game on the road. They were pretty hot after winning Friday's game. And so, you know, the Cubs went through their bullpen pretty good that Friday. So did the Brewers too. But if there was any competitive advantage to be gained, it would have been gained by the Cubs. And so you could just read between the lines that the Brewers just wondered if it was strictly a bad weather forecast that they had. And there's really no excuse to have a bad weather forecast in modern technology. There's Craig Counsell joked the day before that everybody has their own weather app, and therefore everybody has become an amateur weather forecaster. And he said maybe the Cubs need to change their weather app to a different one. And he also had the great quote, it's going to be hard to beat the quote he gave us on Saturday, which made you think that he thought something was up when he said that was the first time his players had to be treated for sunburn during a rainout.
Yeah, you don't get quotes very, you know, that are much better than that, that's for sure. You know, and of the people who was critical was Brewers GM David Stearns. How do you go about talking to him? Was he available at everybody, or what was the situation there?
Yeah, I mean, we were tipped off that he was not pleased and would have something to say about it. You know, if you're a Brewers fan and you weren't a fan of David Stearns before Saturday, that probably helped you jump on board, because he stood up for his team. He wasn't happy that they didn't play. He was suspicious of why they didn't play, and he decided to say something about it. You know, maybe there was the backlog of some of the shade the Cubs threw at Eric Thames on the PED front the first time in April, when, you know, John Lackey, one of their pitchers, and pitching coach Chris Bosio just said things that, you know, questioned the legitimacy of what Thames was doing. Maybe that was still irking them, and this was the straw that broke the camel's back. I don't know. They never really spoke out on that issue. But Davis Stern stuck up for his team, you know, and Brewers fans should like him too. You know, Cubs fans didn't. Y'all saw lots of negative commentary on Twitter Sunday from Cubs fans who accused the Brewers of whining, and of course they're going to stick up for their team too. So, but if Brewers fans, if the jury was still out on David Stearns for them before Saturday, they should have appreciated him stepping forward and sticking up for his team. That's what you're supposed to do.
Yeah, and I was kind of maybe a little surprised at the legs that this story had, because it kept going into yesterday. People were still talking about it and asking questions about it and interested in it. Were you at all surprised at the social media response and still the number of inquiries and just the general interest?
Yeah, I mean, once the Brewers, spoke out, you knew their fans were going to jump on board with what they were saying, and the Cubs fans were going to jump out against them. So, I think it certainly heated up the rivalry, if it needed heating up any. And the Brewers and Cubs usually get after each other pretty good. And obviously the Cubs, are way ahead of where the Brewers are competitively after winning the World Series last year, too. So, you did have the off day the next day, which at least it was off for the Brewers, not the Cubs. And so that gave some other media outlets the chance to jump in on it. So, yeah, I think it'll probably die down now, although on July 6th, when the Brewers have to travel down to play that makeup game, it might get brought up again. The interesting thing about it from the Cubs' perspective, Matt, is that, it was a big bobblehead day for them. They had a sellout. They probably disappointed a lot of their fans as well. If you came into the city from the suburbs or even other parts of Illinois or the Midwest to watch that game, you probably weren't happy that it got postponed. And you might not be able to come back on Thursday, July 6th. That's when those tickets will have to be used, because all of their games are sold out. So it's not like you could buy a ticket to a different game. So it's just a shame that it was a Saturday. It could have been played, and it wasn't played. And now it's going to be made up on a Thursday. That's probably going to inconvenience a lot of people. So, and it didn't rain, so it's just open to second guessing. If it would have rained, then you can say, okay, they were right. But it didn't, so you're going to get second guess. And the Brewers' main issue was, why couldn't they wait a little longer, to see what it was going to do, because it did stop raining almost immediately after they called the game off. So they just didn't understand that after playing in a monsoon the day before, the Cubs were so quick to call off the game the next day. But maybe one was linked to the other. And if it was, nothing more sinister than a bad weather forecast that the Cubs were following, then too bad. I mean, have a better weather forecast then. The one I saw on TV was exactly right. Maybe the Cubs should have got up and watched that same morning program I did. They called the weather exactly right.
Yeah, exactly. And you mentioned fans being upset. I know personally, I have a friend of mine from grad school. Shout out to Sam King. He drove up from about Indianapolis or from West Lafayette, right. and he got to Chicago, to get the World Series bobblehead, and it was already there. And they said, "Oh, no baseball." And he stayed around all day. No rain, kind of bummed about it, and who knows if you can get back, especially when you're driving from a couple hours away, Yeah. So the Brewers are generally just lucky they don't have to deal with that stuff when they play at home.
Yeah, it does give us an appreciation for that, and we've seen so much rain on the road this year. The Cardinals have had all kinds of issues with the Cubs as well. Pittsburgh, the Brewers went there and it rained. It does just give you just great appreciation that we never have to deal with that with the roof at Miller Park. I saw some fans suggest Saturday morning, couldn't the two teams just get on buses and go up to Miller Park and play Saturday afternoon? If you can't play in Chicago, go up and play where you can play. And so we are spoiled, in a good way. You can't do much about Wrigley because it was built, 150 years ago or whatever, but anybody that's built a stadium since the Brewers without putting a roof on it probably should have rethought that building process.
Yeah, and getting away from what you termed Weathergate, so appropriately. You mentioned Eric Thames and his hot start, and since then he's had a few leg issues. You know, what can you say about those? And you know, are they kind of just the regular aches and pains that come with the season?
Well, first of all, let's just say no one expected him to hit 11 home runs every month. You know, he hit 11 in April, a club record, and had all kinds of other tremendous offensive numbers. So no one expected that. If you hit 11 home runs every month, you're going to finish with 66, right? Because there's 6 month season. So do I have my math right there, Matt?
Yeah, it's good enough for me.
But he has been bothered by leg soreness, leg cramping, tightness, just various issues. Nothing bad enough to put him on the DL yet, but it's really really hampered him. You know, he's a very tightly wound guy. I mean, this guy, you know, you could bounce a quarter off of him, off of his thighs and stomach, and I mean, he's just powerfully built and tightly wrapped is the best way to put it. So he has told us that keeping flexibility, especially with his legs, have been an issue for him during his career. And he said to really work on stretching. He's done other things like yoga, Pilates, all that stuff. But also, he is not used to this schedule that where they play almost every day. In Korea, I'm pretty sure there was a schedule off day every week. They did not have as an aggressive a schedule as this. He admits that he's had some issues figuring out his own workout routine, what he should and shouldn't do, and that maybe he needs to back off and just be more ready for the games and not you know, work out so much. So he's trying to figure it out too. The Brewers are trying to figure it out. But anybody that understands hitting knows if you don't have your legs under you, you're not going to do a lot of damage, and especially power hitters. You know, he has not been driving the ball. When he has gotten on base, it's been like singles, and he's walking. To his credit, you know, he still has a very good on-base percentage. His batting average has gone down tremendously in the last weeks. Not that you could keep batting in the high 300s, but his OBP is still 429, which is outstanding. So to his credit, he still finds ways to get on base. But he hasn't been doing as much damage from a power and run production standpoint. And so it's going to be something to watch. They do have a 10-day DL now, Matt, instead of 15 days. And part of the reason for making the change was to allow for smaller type injuries. Like, look how perfectly it worked with Ryan Braun. He had a forearm strain and a calf strain. They thought they could clear them both up in 10 days. And so they put him on the DL, and he came off right on schedule, came off the DL right on schedule Sunday. So that DL is made for lesser injuries. But, you know, would Thames need 10 days off? So far they haven't thought he would. But it's something to watch. And, you know, he's a smart guy, and they're very proactive with their physical training and medical care. So just something for us to watch to see if he can play through it and literally get his legs back under him again, or if they'll have to do something.
And you mentioned earlier, kind of sticking to infielders here, you mentioned earlier Eric Sogard and kind of his hot stretch. How impressive has he been since his call-up?
Yeah, nerd power, right? They call it nerd power. He wears glasses. You don't see many players wear glasses. He prefers it over wearing contacts. And he's a little guy, you know, he's a little guy. And so when he came and started bopping some home runs and extra base hits right away, it was amazing. You know, in a four game series in San Diego, he had 2 4 hit games. You know, some guys will go the whole year without a 4 hit game. He does it twice in 3 days. And so it's just part, one of the fascinating things about this team, Matt, has been unexpected contributions. You know, Sogard's been a guy, you know, Jesus Aguilar, who slugged his way onto the team in spring training, then stopped getting regular bats because Eric Thames was so hot. They play the same position, first base, cooled off. But then lately he's been able to pick it back up again and start making, you know, contributions again. So they've just had so many contributors to their offense. Craig Counsell calls it his position player group, and they have been really deep with so many contributors this year. And it's why their offense has been so high scoring. They have one of the better offenses in the major leagues. And it's their offense so far that has carried them. Their pitching's been up and down, but their offense has been mostly consistent and mostly high performing. And you know, they've scored 233 runs already. And so, but it is amazing because a lot of these guys are just getting their major league careers going, and they're already starting to make some impact.
You know, and how much are those unexpected contributions a function of, you know, opposing teams and pitchers not necessarily having a great scouting report and knowing how to handle those guys, since they don't have, you know, very many major league at bats for a bunch of the guys you just mentioned?
Yeah, the way baseball works is, you know, players come up. If they do well, then teams learn how to adjust to them, and then you see if they adjust back. You know, it's a kind of a cliche that they call baseball a game of adjustments, but it really is, because they play every day. So there's all, you know, you see a lot of in-game adjustments, much less day-to-day or week-to-week. You'll see a pitcher do something different to a hitter in his second at-bat than he did his first, or vice versa. The hitter make an adjustment when they see the pitcher pitching him a certain way. So it is a game of adjustments. The Brewers have made some really good adjustments. Look at Keon Broxton. He was off to a terrible start this season, kind of like last year, and then he made some adjustments and figured it out and got going again. So Santana's been a lot like that too. He got off to a very slow start and then, you know, made some adjustments and has been a pretty hot hitter. You know, you look at their right as we're doing our podcast, I was looking at the Brewers statistics in the Journal Sentinel this morning, and they have 10 hitters batting 270 or above. You know, that's pretty good. Well, the guy there's two laggers that play every day, Arcia and VR, and they're trying to get them going. Arcia is just a kid, so you know, you got to let him play some more. VR, you know, has not hit like he did last year yet. He did get three hits Sunday, which was lost in their 13-6 whipping by the Cubs, but maybe that gave him a little bit of foothold because he needs to get going. You want your leadoff hitter to get on base more than he's been getting on base so far. So, but if you only have a couple of laggers, then you're doing pretty good. You know, you're never going to have all eight hitters hot at the same time, but if some guys are hot while others are cold, and then vice versa, then that's how you sustain an offense. If everybody's hot every day, then you're going to win the pennant.
Yeah, well, that's kind of, you know, how it works. If you can get everybody hot every day, that's you know, what kind of special seasons are made of. You mentioned Arcia. You know, what was the kind of feeling like about a week ago on that Sunday against the Mets when he went down on the infield? Looked like he was holding his knee, and he was down there for a little while. Was there any expectation that injury could be bigger than it was?
No, Arcia is, you know, he is such a good fielder, Matt. I mean, he's not going to have to hit a ton to have a nice major league career, because he's going to excel most days in a very important department that Counsell talks a lot about, run prevention. You know, if you save three runs with some great defensive plays in a game, but you don't drive in any runs, you're still plus three for the day. You know, you save those three runs. It's three runs that you don't have, your offense doesn't have to score to keep up. So, Arcia's, you know, just, you watch him play shortstop and he's just so effortless out there and it's just so smooth. And so if anything you get from him offensively is just a bonus. And he has had some big hits for him. And he's got some pop in his bat, but you know, he just needs to play some more. He came up the last 2 months of last year, and so now he's got, what, 7 more weeks under his belt as we speak today. So he's just getting going. You know, most baseball people will tell you, until a guy gets 1,000 at bats under his belt, or maybe even more, you know, 1,200, 1,300 at bats, then you don't really know what you've got in him. And so he's a long ways away from that. He's just a kid, you know, he's a very young player. So, but he's exciting to watch in the field. You don't see many guys, any better playing shortstop in the major leagues right now than he does at his early age.
You know, and you also mentioned VR struggling. He's not the same defensive player that Arcia is. So how do you get him going and contributing more than he has so far?
Yeah, he just needs a few good games. Maybe the Sunday was the start of a little streak for him by getting three hits. No matter how much success you've had, if you're struggling for a long period of time, you lose some confidence. And you certainly don't feel comfortable up there. So he just needs a good series where he gets a few hits each day, gets going again. He's really struggled. You know, he's a switch hitter. He's really struggled from the right side. And so he's got to figure that out a little bit. It's tough switch hitting because you've got to stay sharp from both sides of the plate. Everybody else just has to worry about one side of the plate. But he's got to try to feel comfortable righty and lefty. So that's both the curse and the blessing of switch hitting. Switch hitters are valued because it stops matchups on the other team if they bring a lefty and the guy just bats right-handed or vice versa. So he just needs to get going, have a good series, and I think he'll be fine.
Yeah, how much are his past base running mistakes in his head, if at all, as he kind of moves forward? Because those have trickled into this season too.
Yeah, I don't think that's something that he dwells on or they try to dwell on. They'd love him to get on base more and have some opportunities for base running mistakes. He just hasn't been on base much. And, you know, he has 9 stolen bases, but last year he had 62 to lead the major leagues. So, right now he doesn't even lead the Brewers in steals. Keon Broxton, who has very good speed, has 10. But the Brewers do like to, you know, push the envelope a little bit on the bases, and he's a big part of that. And the way Thames and Braun and Shaw have performed just in general this year, you know, if VR starts getting on more, those guys are going to start knocking in more runs. So that you know, that's something that that he needs to do, and they hope he will. And so, you know, we've been talking a lot about the offense, so let's talk a little bit about what Corey Knebel has done, because I think since our last podcast, he's taken over as the closer from Neftali Feliz. I don't think that change had been made at the time of our last podcast, unless I'm mistaken. Knebel's been unbelievable. You know, we like to say you can't spell Knebel without K, and he's got a lot of K's. You know, he's a struckout. I mean, this is hard to wrap your mind around. If he was doing this in a big city, people would be going crazy. He has 38 strikeouts in 22 innings. And he's set a Brewers record for most consecutive appearances with at least one strikeout. He's the only reliever in baseball this year that has, I want to say, 15 or more appearances with a strikeout in every one. The guy's been remarkable, Madden. And it looks like, I think we're seeing the birth of a longtime closer here.
Yeah, and that's something that the Brewers could definitely use. They've kind of gone through and cycled through closers a bunch over the past few years, and it seems like it'd be very valuable, you know, to have someone they can rely on in that ninth inning, and then you just need to figure out who the guys are going to be to get the ball to him.
Yeah, they had a several-year period there where Frankie Rodriguez was their closer off and on. We kept saying he was like a boomerang. They threw him and then away, and then he would always come back. You know, they kept reacquiring him and re-signing him. And so he handled it for a long time. And then, you know, they traded him a couple of years ago, and they've been, last year, Jeremy Jeffress, you know, was doing a good job closing, but got traded. Tyler Thornburg took over for him, and then he got traded in the offseason. So they've traded two closers since the start of 2016. But, you know, Neftali Feliz sort of pitched his way out of the closer's role, had trouble keeping the ball in the ballpark. And so they've gone more to Corey Knebel. And he can do the one thing that's the great equalizer in closing, strike you out. You know, when he gets in trouble, he can get out by striking out. If you're not a strikeout pitcher and the ball gets put in play, it might get put in play for a hit, you know, or a run scoring out. And so the one thing that makes him a great equalizer at the end of a game is if he's in trouble, he can strike you out. And he just has devastating stuff. He has a high octane, high 90s fastball and a great breaking ball, a great curveball that can just buckle your knees. And so he's got the stuff to do, and he's going to be a guy to watch. You know, he was a closer in college. He was a closer in the minors, and now he's getting a shot up here. And so let's see what he makes of it. So far, so good. That's for sure.
You know, and you mentioned earlier that the Brewers' rotation hasn't been too consistent. How do you think that changes when Junior Guerra comes back, probably this week?
Yeah, we expect him back at the end of the week in that Arizona series. And it's going to it should make a big difference. He started the year as their number one starter. And he only lasted three innings on opening day, and he hurt his hurt his calf, and he hasn't pitched since. So everybody wants their number one pitcher to be active, and so let's see what happens with him. That's going to be something to watch. And generally after you've missed as much time as he's missed, it takes a while to settle in. So we'll see how soon he can be effective. But he's going to be a welcome, re-addition to the team. A lot of people don't realize that, he hasn't thrown a pitch since the third inning of opening day.
Yeah, and who do you think moves out in order to, make room for him?
Well, Paulo Espino took that last turn, came up from the minors on Friday and pitched and then was sent down the next day. So I don't know what player will go down yet, but right now, he'll fit back into the rotation in that spot and no one will have to come out. Just someone's going to have to come off the team.
Gotcha. All right. Well, I think that about covers all the bases for today's podcast, Tom, don't you think?
I think so. This gives us a start on this homestand. Brewers, two games against Toronto. That's as short as a series can be, just about, Matt. A 6:40 game and then a 12:10 game. And so it's not even a 24-hour series. From the start of the first game to probably the end of the second game, that's a quick series.
Yeah, I mean, you don't see those very often. I mean, obviously with interleague you get those two-game series, but those games in quick succession are not the kind you usually see.
And day night. I mean, Toronto may not. Toronto's players might not even unpack their suitcase.
Yeah, maybe they'll just sleep over at Miller Park.
If they have a long game tonight, they might.
And then after that, Arizona comes into town and they've been a really hot team. It'll be interesting to see how the Brewers stack up against them, especially with Junior Guerra probably coming back.
Yeah, and they'll probably match up one of those games against their, former ace, Zach Greinke. So he should be pitching in that series. So some fun stuff to watch coming up.
Yeah, and I guess we might as well point out that our next podcast will probably be at the end of the at the beginning of June, either June 1st or June 2nd, probably June 2nd. And before that, the Brewers will be coming off of a four-game road trip, a quick road trip against the New York Mets, a team they've already swept in a three-game series about a week ago. So we'll see kind of what that brings and, if they can have the same level of success over at Citi Field.
That's true.
So, all right, everybody. Well, thank you for joining the two of us today for the Journal Sentinel Brewers podcast. As always, you can find the work of Tom Hodricourt and Todd Rosiak, the two Brewers beat reporters, at jsonline.com/brewers. And you can find the latest podcasts also on JS Online, as well as Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, TuneIn, basically anywhere that you listen to podcasts. So if you enjoy following along, make sure to subscribe and so you never miss an episode.
At Ability Chiropractic, we believe every child deserves to grow up healthy, strong, and connected to the incredible power within their own body. From infants to adults, our doctors specialize in purposeful chiropractic care that restores balance between the brain and body, helping you and your family live and heal the way you were designed to, naturally. Families across Columbus are choosing to build lifelong wellness from the start. Discover what true health feels like at Ability Chiropractic. Schedule your visit today at abilitychiro.com.
COTA has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.